Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
Good morning and glad you could join us for the midweek edition of Africa Link, live from our studios in Bonn, Germany. I'm Crispin Mwakideu. And these are our main stories. The European Union pledges more financial assistance to the war-ravaged Central African Republic.
The European Union has pledged to increase its assistance by another 72 million euros.
The Kenyan government refutes claims by Somali Islamist group Al-Shabaab that it had killed nearly 20 police officers and taken others hostage.
The government has denied flatly that Al-Shabaab did not kill the big number that they are referring to.
And behind the headlines, African migrants in South Africa living in fear after xenophobic attacks subsided. These stories and more in the next 25 minutes.
Top story.
Digging deeper into the pocket. The European Union has pledged an additional 72 million euros in humanitarian assistance to the Central African Republic. The financial promise was given at a donors conference in Brussels. Germany said it would provide an extra 5 million euros, bringing the total amount pledged to almost 400 million euros. CAR's interim president, Catherine Samba-Panza, who was also in Brussels, had earlier pleaded with donors to release the much-needed funds ahead of the general elections scheduled later this year. The government in Bangui is struggling to organize elections that are seen as a crucial step in leaving behind a brutal conflict. For more details on the EU donor conference, Isaac Mugabe spoke to DW's Andrea Rosenberg in Brussels.
The European Union has pledged to increase its assistance by another 72 million euros. 10 million of that are to go into humanitarian assistance. 40 million euros are for budget support. And there's also 22 million that are to go to the EU Trust Fund for the Central African Republic. That trust fund is called BEKU. That means hope in Sango, the main language in the Central African Republic. And this trust fund is to support actions linking humanitarian response to reconstruction and midterm development. And that actually was the big overarching topic of this conference, how to go from humanitarian aid to the big word that you heard everywhere was resilience. So how to go from humanitarian aid to resilience. Well, and overall, the EU says it has mobilized almost 400 million euros for the Central African Republic, and that was in the years 2013 and 2014.
Is the money for the elections that are scheduled for later this year catered for in the 72 million that have been pledged?
Yes, there is support to hold the elections, and indeed the Central African Republic has said that it still lacks the money to organize elections. They had been supposed to be held early this year, then they'd been postponed to the summer. Now they have been postponed to sometime within 2015. Interim President Katrin Samba-Panza made very, very clear that she is committed to having democratic and credible elections within this year. But she said that she still lacks the money to organize these elections. And it is a huge logistical endeavor. The economics minister, Florence Limbio, explained to me it's about voter registration, it's about coming up with ballots, it's about distributing ballot boxes. So there really is a lot of plain logistical things, organizational things that the transitional government has to cope with. Another problem is the security. The rebels have pledged to lay down their arms, but it's a huge country. There's factions of the rebel group, so not always everybody agrees to what their leaders may have signed. And the question really is whether security can be guaranteed to hold elections throughout the country. And in order for that to happen, in order for elections to be held by the end of this year, a disarmament and demobilization process would have to start very, very soon. And the financial assistance that's been pledged, the money would actually have to be disbursed pretty much right away.
DW's Andrea Rosenberg in Brussels. Around 1.4 million people in the Central African Republic still depend on food aid. Nearly 500,000 refugees have sought shelter in neighboring countries like Chad and Cameroon. Most of the displaced persons rely on food coupons provided by organizations like the World Food Programme, among others. This report by Antonio Cascais has been adapted for Africa Link by Christina Kripal.
Speaking to DW, Public Information Officer at the World Food Programme, Cornelia Petz, said the situation in Central African Republic is extremely difficult. Even before the conflict, 1.5 million people were hit by a famine. Now things have gotten worse.
Since the start of the conflict, food production has been halved. Only a quarter of all livestock survived the crisis. People are really in dire straits.
At the same time, political circumstances and the security situation are placing aid agencies before huge challenges. WFP shipments are continuously plundered and the agency's personnel have been attacked. The problem is exacerbated by criminal gangs that steal the food meant to be distributed to those in need. As a result, only a small part of the aid reaches the people it is meant to help. 55-year-old Abuni Fisatu is one of those who depend on the food rations for survival. 2 years ago, at the start of the crisis, she lost her family and had to flee from her home. Now she waits for food in front of Bangui's central mosque.
Auparavant, au moment, il y avait des subventions. Souvent, on trouve une quantité satisfaite.
Initially, we got more food. They gave us salt, beans, rice, and sometimes maize. But the rations got smaller by the day. Now, they are just not enough.
The World Food Programme recently introduced food coupons to try and solve some problems. These coupons have also benefited local food producers instead of relying on imported foodstuffs. Cornelia Petz once again.
The vouchers are worth $10, and each person will get one per month, besides being supplied with rice, lentils, and cooking oil. People will be able to supplement their diet by buying food in local stores.
Critics of the coupon system point out that the aid organizations and traders settle beforehand on which foodstuffs can be acquired through the system, taking the decision away from the citizens. Grocer Ismael Boubar agrees that he can only accept coupons for a few products.
1 liter cooking oil, 1 kilogram rice, and 2 bars of soap.
Et 2 morceaux de savon.
Meanwhile, at the Brussels International Donor Conference, the European Union has offered to increase help to stabilize the CAR's economics and politics.
Christina Kripal with that report written by Antonio Cascais.
Follow the changes sweeping across Africa. For analysis and in-depth reports, tune in to Deutsche Welle's Africa Link every morning, Monday to Friday.
Searching for Shabab. Kenyan police say they have begun a major security operation against Al-Shabab militants. The manhunt comes after an ambush in Garissa in which the Islamists claimed to have killed 20 police officers. However, the Kenyan government dismissed the allegations as propaganda, saying one officer had died of injuries with 4 others wounded. Garissa County, which borders Somalia, has witnessed numerous attacks by Al-Shabab. One of the worst happened during Easter weekend when gunmen stormed a university college, killing 142 students and 6 members of the security forces. DW's correspondent James Shimanyula in Nairobi has been filling Isaac Mugabe with more details on this story.
I've been talking to the county commissioner for Garissa County, James Kianda, and he has summarized the situation very briefly, going to the extent of telling us that there is a major operation underway there.
Garissa has come. There was a contact between our security officers who are on patrol with some operatives. And after the exchange, they disappeared into some forest. We organized a team of officers that have been pursuing them. And that operation is going on as we speak now.
And what have government officials been saying about the number of policemen that are alleged to have been killed by the Al-Shabaab militants?
The government has denied flatly that Al-Shabaab did not kill the big number that they are referring to in Somalia through their clandestine transmission. But what the government admits through the Garissa County Commissioner James Kianda, the very commissioner that I've spoken to a few minutes ago.
He did not lose people on the ground. It is only one officer who sustained some injuries. That to me is not true. That's what I've said. What is confirmed and is on the ground is that only one officer succumbed to some gunshot wounds.
Okay, then, what have ordinary Kenyans been saying about the latest attacks, given the fact that it is not the first time that such attacks are happening?
Kenyans, as they did last time when there was an attack on Garissa University College, have been spending much of their spare time in between their activities or their work to wonder for how long they are going to stay getting bad news from Garissa. They thought probably, according to many Kenyans, that after the University College attack, things would have ended there.
And is there a common understanding within other East African countries on the threat posed by Al-Shabaab, or they just see it as a Kenyan affair?
I think the outside world, especially regional neighbors of Kenya, are just seeing this as an affair that Kenyans should tackle on their own. Because as we speak now, Mr. Mugabe, no African leader has come here, you know, to talk about it or to suggest that a meeting should be held, maybe in Tanzania, the chair of the East African community, to look for quick ways of coordinating or cooperating fully and concretely with the express purpose of defeating Al-Shabaab. So as you said, again, we go back to your own words, it is still a Kenyan affair for the Kenyans to solve.
James Shimanyula in Nairobi. You're listening to Africa Link from DW Studios in Bonn, Germany. And still to come, how Nigerians are coping with the energy crisis.
Behind the headlines.
Solving a problem with another problem is how rights groups have described the handling of xenophobic attacks in South Africa. They accused President Zuma's government of fanning xenophobic sentiment after police launched a major crackdown on illegal immigrants. But the government has defended Operation Fiela, insisting it had stabilized the situation and prevented further loss of life. Since April, violent attacks on African migrants in South Africa have left 8 people dead, hundreds injured, and property worth millions destroyed. Thousands of others have sought refuge in overcrowded camps in Durban, where Subri Govender now reports behind the headlines.
I move a nation that would not allow that fear of death, of torture, of imprisonment, of exile, or persecution should result in the perpetuation of injustice.
That's an extract of Thabo Mbeki's famous I Am an African speech, held on the occasion of the passing of the new constitution of South Africa in May 1996. It's been heard repeatedly again this year as part of the efforts to stem the tide of xenophobia that has once again spread across the new non-racial and democratic country that has also become home to a high percentage of foreign nationals.
Remember your humanity. Say no to xenophobia.
Soon after the outbreak of the latest round of xenophobic attacks early in April, which left at least 7 people dead, the South African government, national and provincial ministers, local government mayors and officials, and a number of progressive forces have embarked on a major campaign to condemn the violence and to help the victims. Peace rallies were held in Durban and Johannesburg, and special camps were set up for the victims. While most of the thousands of displaced foreign nationals have either returned to their home countries in Mozambique, Malawi, Zimbabwe, Zambia, and other countries, or sought to re-enter South African society. Another 500 victims, including about 180 children, are still in a refugee camp in the area of Chatsworth in Durban. Steve Mesher is a 35-year-old Congolese who returned to his home on the outskirts of the city of Durban with his wife and three children a week ago, after being encouraged to do so by South African government officials. Mesher has been in South Africa for the past 10 years and has been working as a car guard to earn a living. But he is now back in the Chatsworth camp after he was attacked on his way to work a few days ago.
Someone pointed me the gun at the back here. The other one pointed me, showed me the knife in the front and took whatever I had and took my bag and threw it in the bush. Till now, because they promised if we see you again, we are going to shoot you. Then I had that fear again. Then my wife advised me to leave, to come here, to be sleeping here. Then, no, I was here for 1.5 months. Then I left like 1 week ago. Then I'm back again.
A 45-year-old man from Burundi, Bigara man Aniset, who has been in South Africa for the past 12 years with his wife and six children, has been at the camp for a month. He says he was forced to flee the area where he lived with his family because the locals accused him of taking away their jobs. He worked as a truck driver.
See, we cannot go back where your brother have been banned and killed, and you go back to the same area. It's not possible. You mean we are the next? I want UN to take me where I can get peace. I've been looking for the peace from 1993 in my country. I never get the peace.
Another camp resident, Didier Bigami, who is also from the DRC, says all the people still in the camp appreciate the efforts of the South African government, but their experiences have been directly opposite to the "We are all Africans" messages being expressed by President Jacob Zuma, his ministers, and the media.
I lost my things, I lost my business, I don't have even 10 rand. I asked them to take me, to deport me home. I want to go back home. Like Malawi, Zimbabwe, they go home. Also, I'm a human being. If I don't feel safe, you can't force me to go back in community. But they used to force us here always to go back in community. It's by force, but we don't need to go back in community. We want to go back home.
The officials at the camp say they are doing everything in their power, either to make it possible for the remaining victims to reintegrate in the communities or to return to their home countries. They emphasized the camp was only a temporary measure. One of the medical officials providing health care to the refugees, Dr. Ainsley McCarthy of Doctors Without Borders, says they have found that most of the victims have been seriously traumatized by the xenophobic attacks.
Well, a large portion of them have stories about being treated unfairly by people in positions of power, whether it be the police or some official in home affairs, or at when they've gone to clinics or hospitals, they get treated and told that they're foreigners. Why are you here? Go back to your country. You're taking our jobs. You're creating problems for us. So they are very aware of this, and it's hard for them to bridge this gap.
During this year's Africa Day celebrations at the weekend, the country's leaders made a big effort to promote African unity and development and to focus on what Africans have in common. But despite all the positive statements, many foreign nationals are still not convinced that they are safe in the country.
Subri Govender reporting from a refugee camp in Durban. Stick around as we later in the program revisit that story of xenophobia in South Africa.
Harare, Nairobi, or Abuja, Africa Links correspondents bring Africa stories to you.
To Nigeria now, where life is slowly beginning to resemble normalcy. This comes after the Independent Petroleum Marketers Association of Nigeria said companies had started pumping oil again on Tuesday. Unpaid tanker drivers have also stopped striking. The resumption of fuel distribution happened after Nigeria's finance ministry agreed to pay a debt of $1 billion in subsidy payments. Africa's biggest economy and oil producer was nearly brought to its knees in an energy crisis lasting weeks. Many observers say the scale has never been witnessed before. From Lagos, Sam Olukoya reports.
The disagreement between the government and the oil marketers may be over, but it depends on the fuel scarcity which resulted from the disagreement still lingers. Many businesses remain short or only carried out partial operations. Many households are without water because there is no fuel to power generators that will pump water. Odeshino Adishino, who runs a hostel for girls, says he's unable to buy fuel to power the hostel's generator because of the long queues at the petrol stations and because they are selling for about 3 times the official price.
There is still a lot of hardship concerning the fuel consumption. Up to this moment, they are still selling 200 naira, 300 naira from the filling station. People, there are a lot of queue at the place, so we can't avoid to go and queue on the something. It has affected us because for the past 1 week now, we've been bottling truck of water, 500 naira. Normally, we normally bought it 100 naira, 150. Now it's 500 naira.
Fuel scarcity is a regular occurrence in Nigeria, even though the country is Africa's largest exporter of crude oil. Nigeria has to import virtually all its fuel because the country's refineries are not working due to poor maintenance. Under the importation arrangement, marketers sell the fuel they import at a low price. In return, the government is supposed to pay the marketers subsidies. The agreement is said to have given room to a corrupt system which enables marketers to get paid for fuel they never imported. Hundreds of millions of dollars is said to be lost annually through this scheme. The marketers say the government owes them about $1 billion, but the government disputes this claim. Nigeria's finance minister, Ngozi Okonjo-Iweala, is wary about the claim.
There is a deliberate attempt to sabotage this economy and bring it to a halt and a standstill. But there's now Nigerians have to know the truth, because some of the things that happen in this country are inexplicable.
But Babafemi Olawore, executive secretary of the Major Oil Marketers Association of Nigeria, says their business is not as rosy as some people assume.
At the peak of the challenges we have, challenges when banks refuse to extend their lines of credit to us, and I want to say it openly here that we did not get that assistance from the banks. In other words, there was no way we could import. We are owing them, and they said we should pay back.
The temporary truce may have calmed hostilities between the government and its oil creditors. But with the government's deep suspicion that oil importers are making excessive claims, signs of another fuel shortage is hovering in the country.
DW correspondent Sam Olukoya reporting from Lagos.
Opinion.
And in this week's opinion, let's take another look at the story of xenophobic attacks that sent African immigrants to refugee camps in South Africa. From Nelson Mandela's famous Rainbow Nation to Thabo Mbeki's speech, I Am an African, South Africa was seen as the beacon of unity in Africa after the fall of apartheid. But the xenophobic attacks no doubt put a dent on South Africa's image. And so we ask, why is there still so much hatred in South Africa? We would love to hear your opinion. Send us your thoughts by a text message to country code 49160-957-59510. An email to feedback.africa@dw.de or a letter to AfricaLink, DW 53110, Bonn, Germany. Your opinion could win you one of the fabulous prizes that Africa Link is giving out.
For more about Africa Link, go to dw.de/AfricaLink. Find out about Africa Link's partner stations, send us your feedback in a text message, and sign up for our newsletter, dw.de/AfricaLink.
And as always, before we go, here's a reminder of our main stories. The European Union has pledged an additional €72 million in humanitarian assistance to the Central African Republic. Authorities in Kenya have dismissed as propaganda claims by Al-Shabaab that 20 police officers had been killed in an ambush in Garissa. And Nigerian oil marketers say they have resumed pumping oil after the government agreed to pay them $1 billion in arrears. Well, that's it for Wednesday's show, but Africa Link returns same time tomorrow. From me, Crispin Mwakideu, enjoy your day.